Hello and welcome to the Best of Wonder Pod. That's right, we're doing another Best of show. More than likely, by the time you're hearing this, I will be off on vacation. Yes, I actually get a break every now and then. Haha. Basically, it's just going to be a bunch of clips of the other shows. The first one I want to start with is one I'm very proud of. When Gunsage and I got a chance to sit down and interview, or interrogate, if you will, Destructoid.com's Jim Sterling. Have fun.
That is what we've been playing. Now, we only have Jim for a limited time because otherwise we're going to starve him to death. So basically, Gunsage and I have come up with some just Q&A stuff to ask him real quick, and then we're going to let him off into that gentle night. I'll go ahead and go with the first question, Gunsage, and then you can ask him one, and we'll kind of go like that till we run out of questions. And it's funny because before the show, when we were having some issues with Skype, we kind of went on a little bit of a nostalgia trip. And that's actually my first question to you, Jim. Now, if for those of you that don't know, I met Jim in 2003 when he was writing at One Site. I really liked his writing. I really liked the way he did things. It kind of opened my eyes to other ways you can write, things of that nature. Okay, enough with the ass kissing. My question is...
You can carry on. If you just brought me on here just to kiss my ass for like half an hour, I'm perfectly okay with
that.
Well,
no, I mean, it's not kissing your ass. It's just the truth. I mean, that's what drew me to you as a writer. It's why I still read you today. It's why, you know, I've known you for just short of a decade because it was there and it taught me a lot about writing. But going back to 2003... Could you ever in your wildest dreams back then, and even as much fun as we had, see yourself doing what you're doing today?
Absolutely not. Like, it's funny because it never even occurred to me to try and make a job of writing about video games back then. I certainly had just started to see the internet as a viable way of getting a nice career as an entertainer, because that's all I ever wanted to do. I'm sure you remember that I used to work with Leo Van Crinks a lot, working on... live comedy. We did some shows and I've done some stand-up comedy in my time. And that was really where I was going for a long time, but until I kind of sat down and realized that I enjoyed writing it more than performing it. And I also enjoyed video games a lot at the time, and it was like I never thought to put them together. I worked a lot for the original incarnation of Project Wonder Boy for a while, just for entertainment. And even then, I took it kind of seriously. I enjoyed doing it a lot. And then just one day after being unemployed for a bit too long, I just thought, well, fuck it. I'll just try. And then I emailed IGN and somehow got a little gig with them. And so, no, I mean, back in 2003, envisaged myself perhaps doing the stand-up circuit or being a famous telly guy with Leo. But this is... been better. This has been more awesome than I would have imagined. So,
you know, I get odd looks every time I say this to one of the old Nation members, and I have said it a few times. In 2005, when I left and went to Alabama, where they apparently don't have as good of internet connections as they do in Mississippi, and I was gone for, you know, 18 months, when I came back and I found out that you were working at Destructoid, I was really happy for you, but at the same time, I wasn't surprised. You've always seemed like you had that drive to write, to create. So, you know, when JCC first told me, oh yeah, by the way, Jim's working for this gaming site now. And I was like, you know, he was taken back because I wasn't surprised at all, you know, having been around you and seen how you were really had no fear of writing anything. You know, I mean, you've gotten me to tell rape jokes, Hitler jokes, use words that I never thought in a million.
I don't know if that's something I should be proud of.
Well, I mean, you should be, for the point of it opened up my mind to other areas to write about. You know, there would have been no Motobob. There would have been no Smurfs. There would have been not a lot of the crazy stuff I did, because I grew up in very, very homogenized American English classes where you just wrote about, you know, stuff, but you never really went too over the top. So, you know, when you, with your influence on me, it was like, oh, so I can actually get away with that? And plus the internet, like you said, hell, it's the internet. Who's going to see me do it? You know, so, I mean, there's kind of a freedom in that.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been something I'm proud of. you know, I got good grades and decent grades in school when it came to English language and everything, but I'm not a trained writer. And I never, I made a decision very early on that I didn't want to go the same route as everyone else. The whole, you know, go to university and get the degree for the thing you want and then go and do that like everyone else. I decided I'd try and make it out there on my own. So I'm very pleased with that. You know, I hold my hands up and say I'm not, I don't have degrees. I don't have, I don't even have any grades worth telling anyone about. Yet here I am making what I would say is a very comfortable living, just doing what I love. And hopefully people who want to do it as well can sort of be encouraged by that. I hope. I know I've encouraged a few people, and I would discourage them from trying to do exactly what I do, because that gets you into trouble sometimes. But certainly give it a go. That just fucking do it is my kind of motto. I added the fucking so that Nike doesn't sue me.
yeah.
But that is my motto.
Yeah, Jim came on the show the other day, and I got a whole pile of cease and desist letters in my fucking mailbox 2 days later. I don't know what that's all about. Hey, as far as I'm concerned, you did it right. I've got a college degree, and you know, it's like some days I go, huh, in this economy, that thing, all it's doing is collecting dust. That's really freaking wonderful. you know, so I mean, you can't argue with the results. So, okay, Gunsage, one of you got a question for Jim.
Okay, so... typically when I think about a job like yours, as far as, you know, going ahead and just writing independently, having fun with it, and then it just, you know, suddenly you're on a gaming site, you're writing, you're making money for it, you're doing videos, it literally, it's like you're living the dream at that point. But, I mean, a part of me is real skeptical and goes, well, okay, but is it all, you know, deadlines and quotas and just, I mean, yeah, you're having fun because... you know, you're sitting down and you're doing what you do, what comes naturally to you, but is it one of those things where you're worried you might eventually be burned out, or is it literally like an actual dream job?
I think that really goes back to the company I'm working for more than the industry itself. I mean, there are some companies, and I won't name names, where the people aren't happy in their jobs. There's a lot of backbiting. It's a very competitive industry, and a lot of people tend not to be friends sometimes. I mean, there are some great friends. I've met some awesome people, but there is a very competitive edge in the industry as well. But in terms of working for Destructoid, it has been a dream job. It's been more than a dream. It's been more than I think I even deserve. My boss Nero and my editor-in-chief Nick Chester are really laid-back, easygoing people who trust me to do what I want. And do what I know works. And pretty much everything I do for Destructoid, I do off my own back. I work harder than I have to, even. I'm paid to do a certain job, to do a certain amount of, not even an amount of posts, just a general amount of exposure on the site. And I go above and beyond that because I love it and because I want to help the site and the company and help us grow. And then the other stuff I do for Games Radar and GameZone, and some magazines that I've been doing as well, that's all freelance, so that's self-employed. So I'm taking on really the work I want, and that's an incredible freedom and one that I'm ludicrously lucky to have.
Yeah, well, see, I was worried because I was like, isn't he pumping out like 10 articles a day? Jesus Christ, they got to be working them over. And it's like, oh, no, actually,
I'm
just...
With the Tokyo Game Show today, I did 20, which isn't my record. I think my record's 25. But again, it's what would be considered above and beyond the Call of Duty. I do it because, well, it's that or sitting around the house wanking all day. And, you know, once you've done that, you might as well do a bit of writing.
Something.
You know, I kind of knew when you first told me, hey, join up at Destructoid, join up at Destructoid. So I did, and I kind of got a feel for the community and all that fun stuff, and I probably should do more there than I do. That I kind of had an idea that the hierarchy there was pretty cool people, but when you put that Bud Dwyer video in a Jimquisition with the violence piece, I went, holy shit. Okay, he got away with that. That's pretty freaking cool. Because that, I mean...
Yeah, that's actually, I've actually got in trouble for something not even half as shocking as that. That's the funny thing. The bug buyer thing, Nero, again, was just really cool. He said, hey, you've got people talking, and you got them to pay attention to your message. Brilliant. That's, you know, that's fine. So long as you don't get me sued, then everything's good. I've gotten in trouble for other things that I didn't even think were that bad. And again, it's not trouble. It's more a case of Nick Chester, bless his poor little heart, taking me to a corner and saying, right, we got 50 complaints here, or Sony phoned me because of this. Can you please not do that again if it's not too much trouble? And funnily enough, the worst thing I ever got in quote-unquote trouble for was saying that Madison Page from Heavy Rain had a Down syndrome face. And the point is, she does. But people were really, Sterling. You did what? You expected better from me. Never mind the fact I've said worse than that before, but that's the nature of the business. And a lot of the trouble, I think, comes from just the fact that it's disruptoid and people like to, you know, they treat us in a certain way regardless, and myself as well. But yeah, I mean, the Bud Dwyer thing was just the fact that Nero sees that and knows what I was going for with it is brilliant, because there are a lot of bosses, not just in the gaming media, but in any business, who won't really understand or get what you're trying to do half the time and try and impose their ideas of how things should be done on you. But neither Nero nor Mick ever do that.
Yeah, because I can tell you, I mean, working in the agriculture industry as I've done off and on most of my life, I've seen some pretty brutal things, some pretty violent things, not human on human, but even that, like when you linked it on Twitter, kind of made me go, whoa, you know, and so it's like, I'm going, that'll get the message across. We'll see what happens in the fallout after this video, but that will get the message across, because every time I see it, it makes me go, oh my God.
It really is it's a horrible video.
Oh, it is.
That was the point. Obviously, you know, the point was that it was horrible and grotesque and upsetting. But it did get the point across. And funnily enough, that is one of the least controversial things I've done in terms of people's reaction to it.
Well, I think it's
even
a good...
the people that...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, even the people that didn't like it, they didn't kick up that much of a fuss. It was interesting.
I think it's a good thing to knock people out of their little safety bubble sometimes. That violence is real, that it happens, and it's so far different than video games that, you know, take one look at that video. Yeah, you're not going to see that in Halo. You're not going to see that in COD. You're not going to see that in Silent Hill. You know, it just doesn't happen.
Exactly.
Okay, my next question, and now that we've thrown the softballs out there, it's really the only one I had that's it's not going to start an argument or anything, but I found it a little curious. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, but back a couple, 3 years ago, if I recall right, didn't you, maybe not on Destructoid, but somewhere, kind of defend Microsoft's $50 a year Xbox Live price tag as something that was a value? Or have I got that wrong?
I don't recall doing it. If I did, I was being a retard.
Okay, because I was going to ask.
I will go back and smack my 3 year older, younger self in the face for saying it.
Okay, because I was going to ask, what if you did, and I know your stance now because we discussed the $59.99 thing. What has changed? What has made you just all of a sudden now being more vocal about this whole price increase and how Microsoft handles Xbox Live?
Yeah, I mean, I don't recall doing that, but I guess one of the major differences is once you get a PS3 and once you get a PC and you're playing games online for free, I mean, that just gives you a new perspective. And I wouldn't say that the Xbox Live thing is this ridiculous con, because I have paid for it and I'll pay for it again, probably, maybe, but I don't know. But when you compare it to that, it's all I like to say is that it's understandable that some people think it's too much money. And some people say, well, you know, it's only $1 a day or whatever. You know, it's only this much a week. And I'm like, yeah, but if you're used to playing online for free, even 50 cents a year could be considered too much because it's more than free. So that's really my stance on it. It's like, I've got no problem with people paying for Xbox Live. I've played for Xbox Live. If you want to play the games on the 360, Xbox Live is a decent service to do it on. But don't just dismiss the arguments of people that say it's too much money. Because, okay, it is only $50 a year, but compared to free forever, that's a massive difference.
Right, okay. And I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just recall either in a comments or maybe a forum at like Nation or something where we had discussed it and you had said it was a value. But I just was curious because we discussed that whole Live price increase versus the PS3 versus PC gaming and this and that. But it leads me to kind of a second part of that question. It's my opinion that because gamers buy $15 map packs from Activision, because gamers continue to put up with this by raging on the internet that they're not going to pay and then sneaking off and paying anyway, aren't we kind of culpable too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Blame the market first has always been a motto of mine. That is the underlying point. Like, sure, have a go at Activision. They do some shitty things. But every time you have a crack at Activision, you've got to look at yourself as well and say, what am I doing to foster this atmosphere? What am I doing to encourage the behavior? Activision in the UK charged £55 for Modern Warfare, both Modern Warfares. Sorry, Modern Warfare 2, and they're charging £55 again for Black Ops, which is games in the UK are used to paying. It's been a while since I was there, but I think £40 is generally the... Oh, no, it's £50 is generally it, and you can usually find them for £40. But the only reason Activision did that was because they knew they could. And they did. And they succeeded. And gamers only have the same as gamers have themselves to blame when they boycott Modern Warfare 2 for not having dedicated servers. But then you go to the Steam's boycott group and see that everyone who joined it are playing Modern Warfare 2. I actually did a post about that. It was like 100 gamers that were online at one given time who were part of the boycott. They were playing Modern Warfare 2.
Who originally got that screen cap? Because I saw that and I laughed unmercifully for like 20 minutes at how I just knew that's what was going to happen. Same with the Left 4 Dead people.
I can't even remember. I may have seen it on Joystick. I can't remember where I sourced it from, but it was a fantastic thing. And it was the same with Left 4 Dead 2 as well. I almost posted about that, but it was a kind of a case of over-egging the pudding. But the same thing happened with Left 4 Dead 2, and I called that as well. Back when people were boycotting it, I wrote an editorial piece called Wow, 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 Left 4 Dead 2. And I was like, most of you people fucking bitching about it are going to be playing it. And most of the people who are bitching about it did play it.
Do you ever see there being a tipping point, industry versus consumer base, or is this just going to keep happening?
It's sad to say, but I think it is going to keep happening, especially as we edge closer and closer to the era of digital distribution once the secondhand market completely disappears. But I do think that publishers are going to have to find ways of working with consumers, because if you've got rid of the secondhand market tomorrow, which is what several publishers would like at the moment, if you hear them, people like THQ and EA who are currently going on a war against secondhand games, if you get rid of used sales altogether, then you're going to have to lower your prices, because part of the reason why games are even bought is thanks to things like trade-in credit and secondhand games. So I think that eventually publishers are going to have to calm themselves down when it comes to prices and budgets as well. Like, I understand that you need to charge a lot of money for a game that costs millions and millions of dollars to make, but we need to get to a point where budgets are not escaping developers.
Just real quick, because you brought up that point, do you think that court ruling on the AutoCAD thing's gonna actually morph into the gaming industry and user agreements, or is it a lot of hyperboil right now?
Well, as I said, because I did report on it, and I said it does set a worrying precedent, but it's not a precedent I think publishers at the moment are going to seize upon. Because if you look at the PSP Go, for instance, when Sony started offering PSP games on the PlayStation Network, they were charged to meet GameStop's prices. Because Sony, for all of their bluster, and for any publisher's bluster when they attack GameStop in the press, they need GameStop, and they are terrified of seriously upsetting GameStop. Because even though they say, oh, the used sales, everyone's buying used, they still give GameStop all these pre-order bonuses, and they still rely on them because they're one of the only major retailers for games in the US. So yeah, they are terrified of losing GameStop support or any company's support. So I think it would take an idiot of a publisher to bring GameStop to court and try and force the terms of their end user license agreement on them. I don't think it will happen anytime soon. But if a publisher was stupid enough to do it and somehow succeed, then good luck with this industry is all I could say to that publisher. Good luck dealing with a black market that's cropped up and gamers who can no longer take the edge off of their $60 purchases with trade-ins.
Yeah, mark my words. Somebody's going to be stupid enough to do it. Somebody is going to try it. I mean, that's just... There's people...
I don't know. I mean, I think publishers have eyes bigger than their bellies, and they often do things without thinking of the consequences. But in terms of GameStop, the power dynamic there is so strong in GameStop's favor that I think if any company was stupid enough to go up against GameStop, they would be too stupid to be in business at the moment. I mean, who knows? Maybe, don't rule it out, perhaps, but I think it is unlikely at this moment. Maybe once digital distribution in the far-flung future is supported enough to give publishers more of a power base. But at the moment, I wouldn't see it happening yet. They might try and change something with their end-user license agreement to really try and sneak something in. But as far as actually fighting GameStop, I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay, Gunsage, give him one more, and then I got a quick one, and we'll let him get off and off into the night.
All right. You tackled a bunch of my questions. But anyway, I've noticed over the past few months, and it seemed to start, I don't know, it could have started before this, but it seemed to start with the Final Fantasy 13 review, a ridiculous amount of people saying, oh, holy shit, you've got bias, and you're just trolling, and da-da-da-da. And I'm looking at it, and I'm going, really? Realistically, I looked at the review, and I didn't want to believe it myself because, fuck, I'm a huge Final Fantasy fan, huge RPG fan in general. And then I played the game, and I was like, no, the game isn't bad. No, really, it isn't bad. 30 hours later, okay, yeah, no, it's actually kind of bad. And I'm looking at it, and I'm going, yeah, there was the kid in me that wanted another good Final Fantasy, kicking and screaming all the way to the bank, and then finally just, you know, going, yeah, no, it really could have been a lot better. I don't understand why they did what they did. And I'm looking at it, and I'm going, firstly, why are you hating the person that went ahead and reviewed it? And second, bias. I mean, okay, what exactly was done wrong here versus anything else that's been reviewed up to this point? And if you really haven't liked the way he's reviewed things, why are you checking out his reviews instead of, you know, making your own fucking opinions? And then I saw that there were several Jimquisitions and a bunch of other stuff, and I'm like, I mean, is there really that? Is it really getting that out of control as far as reviewers in general? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's getting worse. I really think it's getting worse because time was people would get upset if a game didn't get anywhere between 8 and 10. Last year, people were getting upset because Killzone 2 got an 8.5 on, I think it was Videogamer or NowGamer.com, instead of a 9 or a 10. Towards the end of last year and at the beginning of this year, anything that wasn't a 10 is now unacceptable. On IGN especially, I forget which game it was, but it was one of the more recent games, one of the exclusives, obviously. Didn't get a 10, and people were pissed. And I'm sorry, but that is fucking ludicrous. That is fucking ridiculous. Tens, if a company is giving out more than a handful of tens a year, they're doing it wrong. A 10 is a reserved number. That's something important for a game that really is almost perfect. Not totally 100% perfect, but any problems you can think of about it are negligible at best. and people want them given out by like candy to any game that they think is exclusive or even vaguely good, and it's unacceptable. And I worry that there are reviewers that see the kind of shit that Now Gamer put up with and that I put up with sometimes, and think, well, fuck that. I'm just going to write and tell them what they want to hear, not what I think. And, you know, I've got no basis to make that claim, and I wouldn't ever accuse anyone personally of doing it. But I worry that that's a situation we have, where reviewers are almost feeling bullied by their audience. And I can hardly blame them. When I wrote that Final Fantasy XIII review and I logged into my the PlayStation Network on my PS3 and had my inbox full of hate mail, it's like, I can see why a reviewer wouldn't want to fucking put up with this. But, you know, it's become a kind of sad bit of the territory, really. There's not a lot you can do about it other than keep trying, and I hope that more reviewers just tell their audience where to go when they start getting out of hand like this. And the whole bias thing as well, like the word bias has become, it's up there with emo in terms of words people just say and don't actually fucking know what they mean. And, you know, it needs to stop. It probably won't, unfortunately. But we'll see what happens this holiday season when all the big games are coming out. I am sure there will be more fun.
Okay, I've got two real quick. One that just popped in. Which was the backlash worse for? I gotta know. The Assassin's Creed review or the Final Fantasy XIII review?
The Assassin's Creed 2 review was really the start of it, and it's the one that still gets brought up more than anything else. So in terms of long-term backlash, I guess Assassin's Creed 2 is the worst. I compare myself to Jaime Lannister, a character from George R. R. Martin's fantastic Ice and Fire series. He's this guy who killed a king once, which helped people, but because he killed a king, he was considered a villain for it. And wherever he goes and whoever he talks to, that's what they bring up. And Assassin's Creed 2 is basically my version of that king, in that anything I say or do, people will either try and discredit it by bringing it up, or they'll make a joke about it. I was at PAX a couple of weeks ago. I was talking to a developer. I forget which developer it was. I'm sorry, but I had given their game a good score, and he told me that their reaction was, "Hey, that's Jim Sterling, the guy who hates everything." And the funny thing is if you look at my reviews and you look at my news posts, they're overwhelmingly positive in comparison to my negative stuff. The actual reviews I've given below a 5 are far less than the reviews I've given a 7 and above. It's just that they're the ones that cause the most shitstorms, so everyone only thinks about those games. But in terms of short-term backlash, Final Fantasy XIII was by far the worst. I had no idea Final Fantasy fans were that fucking vicious once they stopped fapping to hentai of Riku. But holy shit. Those guys are vicious. I mean, the Assassin's Creed 2 guys and the Alpha Protocol guys, and even the Kane and Lynch defenders, God knows, I had no idea they existed. They get angry, they get stupid, but the Final Fantasy guys were borderline vile in just their venomous attacks. It was interesting, I'll say that much.
We have two more questions, and then we'll let you go. I got one real quick. One of my favorite things about reading you and reading your stuff on Destructoid and Games Radar and stuff like that, is when you do one of those tongue-in-cheek joke pieces that kind of, you know, to my mind are kind of an evolution of the old Morphine Nation, I love nothing more than to see how many people in comments miss the joke entirely and sincerely miss the joke entirely. My question to you is what's more entertaining for you, the people that get the joke and are laughing along with us, or the people that miss the joke and and the amount of them?
Well, the funny thing is I get accused when I write posts like that of trolling. But the thing is it a troll when you make the joke so retardedly obvious that only a fucking idiot could think you were being serious? I write to entertain people. That's all I've ever done. I write to make people laugh. And yeah, I much prefer to get positive comments than negative comments. Only an insane person would actually revel in being hated. So when I write like my blatantly better articles, I fill them with such ludicrous claims and just outright falsehoods that anybody with sense should be able to get that I'm joking, and most people do. But the people that don't get it and come into the comment threads and get into fights and end up making fools of themselves, I wouldn't say that's what I go for, because it's not, but it's certainly a happy byproduct. It kind of adds just that little extra kick to the comedy when someone takes it seriously.
Well, I can tell you, being an old school from the days of the Morphine Associates little string message board, that is like my guilty and pleasure in life. Because the minute I see I can usually tell by the titles of your pieces and the banner, and I'm going, oh, good. Let's see how many people miss it. It's like my favorite guilty pleasure to go, okay, he's completely just going off here. That's nuts. That's nuts. Like, didn't you do one like a character I'd like to sleep with, or a character who you most want to have sex with, or something like that? And there were some people in comments that just, you did
one. It was full of characters like Kirby and Tingle and
the Kirby one, that's
right.
You don't
want to have sex with, and yeah, some people just seem to take it seriously, or they don't, or even if they get that I'm joking, they misinterpret the intent behind it. Like, they think I'm making fun of a particular game. I mean, one of them was, I think it was why Killzone is blatantly better than Halo. And, you know, I'm indifferent to Halo, and I love Killzone, but a lot of people thought I was making fun of Killzone, and it's like, no, Killzone was one of my favorite games of last year. I love it. Another one was the 10 golden rules of Metal Gear Solid, where I did rip the shit out of Metal Gear Solid, but I love Metal Gear Solid. It was jokes made, the kind of jokes being made were only jokes that someone who had played all the games could make, therefore someone who clearly liked the series. It was, you know, it was what's the word, you know, that thing where you
a parody?
Make jokes about things, but don't. No, when you make jokes about something, but it's like, affectionate. There's it.
Oh,
there's
okay.
A word I don't use often, you see.
yeah, you don't. You hate everything.
Yeah, because I hate everything. No, they were affectionate jokes because I loved that series. And many of the things I make fun of are things that I actually like. I mean, I mock Dynasty Warriors, something fierce, but I'm actually one of the only reviewers who likes that series. So, you know, people misinterpret or just straight up make up your agendas for you, and that's always sad when that happens.
I get your tweets on my phone, and when Dynasty Warrior 7 was announced, you're big, bold, it's out. I thought Jim is the only reviewer on the known universe that loves that series.
Story of the week.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah,
my TGS.
Okay, Gunsage has got a final question for you, then we'll let you get out of here.
Okay, mine is very quick. It's, what's your favorite game of all time, and what's your favorite game of the last few months?
That's a good one.
My favorite game of all time is probably Silent Hill 2, simply because of the experience it provides and narratively the things it does that other games just haven't done since. I think a lot of the time Silent Hill 2 should be held up as one of the highest standards of video game storylines, far more than fucking Heavy Rain. But let's see, over the past few months, I think it would obviously have to be Deadly Premonition.
I'd never thought for the life of me I'd enjoy that game, but I absolutely love that
game.
That's
the magic of Deadly Premonition. No one would think, I mean, when I first bought it, I thought, you know, I'm probably going to get a few ironic giggles out of this. The laughter I got from that game wasn't even ironic. Half the time, the jokes they were making were intentional and worked. But they're wrapped up in this idea that everything isn't going to work. And it's just this amazing paradox. And I gave that game a 10 out of 10. And again, people thought I was trolling with that, but I don't think I've ever been more sincere in a review score than that one. And a lot of people that loved it and come up to me at events and say, thank you for recommending this game, clearly says that I wasn't that wrong.
I'll give you a short or a quick ego boost on that game too, because after you did the review, and I think you said a couple things on Twitter, I went to my local GameStop to pick it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
The register biscuit behind the counter, I picked it up, handed it to him. He's like, oh, this is the last copy. He says, you know, we had 10 this morning, and now we have none. You bought the last copy. And I went,
nice.
There's no way. Really? Jim's influencing people in my hometown. Okay, that's it. I'm feeling like I'm being watched now. I mean, it was, I don't know if for sure, I won't claim that your review had something to do with it, but the guy was like, I can't believe this game. Like, we had 10 copies yesterday, and you're buying the last one. I'm like going, Yeah. And your review'd been out like maybe 2 days at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly, according to Ignition, the publisher, I certainly helped. I couldn't take all the credit. There were sites like NeoGAF were big on it. The Something Awful guys were apparently big fans, and later on, Giant Bomb went ahead and did a video playthrough of it. So that all helped. But yeah, I mean, according to Ignition, I did very well on it. And there was a guy who works in a GameStop somewhere who said 6 people in one day came in and said they read the Destructoid review and had to see it for themselves. So, yeah, I mean, that is one of the proudest moments of my career, is helping the Deadly Premonition to sell and get into people's hands, because that game deserved to be played by everyone. And the fact that Destructoid's logo is on the front cover of the European version of that game is just mind-blowing. And I'm incredibly proud to be part of, to be so intrinsically linked to such a beautiful cult game, to the point where when I was at PAX, people were giving me copies of the game to fucking autograph.
Holy
and I didn't even
shit.
Make the fucking thing. All I did was review it and post a video of it and talk about it. But people think Deadly Premonition, and a lot of people also think Jim Sterling at the same time, and that's just mind-blowing and humbling and amazing.
Well, it did one thing for me, and not that I get too wrapped up in it, but it reminded me, or gave me a nice little refresher, that games don't have to be billion-dollar budgets, pretty slick and polished to be fun. And that's what that game was. It was just a good
Absolutely.
Time.
All they have to do is entertain. And that's why I gave it a 10, because that game either deserved a 1 for its gameplay problems, or a 10 for the amount of times it fucking made me laugh. And no game in which a transvestite police officer cracks you on the head and holds you hostage deserves a 1. That game is a 10 all the fucking way, for its ridiculous music, for its awesome cutscenes, its ridiculous dialogue, unbelievable characters, just everything about that game. And the fact that even the game's problems and the low-res graphics, and the fact that the music is slightly too loud for the dialogue, just these stupid issues, I wouldn't have the game any other way. I would be unhappy if they'd fixed the music. It just enhanced the experience of basically living in a B-movie. And it was a living thing, because it was open world as well, which a lot of people don't give it credit for. And here's this $20 game, but you've got a whole fucking open world full of characters living their own lives. And it did a lot. I think it challenged the idea of what a budget game could be, as well as challenged the idea of what a game could be. $20 games are usually considered shitty, cheaply made, quick little wastes of time. But here was a game that I think after I'd completed it, I put 40 hours into it. And compare that to a $60 game that's done in 6 hours, and just wow.
I knew I was on to a winner when in the opening credits, when your car goes off the road and the squirrel in front of your car screams like a chimpanzee, I knew I was going to be entertained from beginning to end. I literally watched that intro like 3 times to make sure that was a chimpanzee sound, and the squirrel's eyes are all huge, like he's, you know, doing the cartoon double take, and I just went, okay, this is worth my $20 right here. The fucking intro has me rolling on the ground laughing. I mean,
the game was just so unexpected. I mean, you look at the trailers, even now, even the latest trailer they did for the European release makes it look like a very serious Japanese horror game. And any laughter you get from it is just the fact that it looks a bit silly in an unintentional way. And then you play it. And when I played it, I played that the hotel scene between York and Polly.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, this is not what I ever expected to see in my entire life. And it's brilliant. So, yeah, I mean, if any of the people listening to this have not played Deadly Premonition, just please. It's only $20 at its most expensive. You can probably find it for cheaper on Amazon or wherever, but don't buy it used. They could really do with
it. Yeah, don't buy it used.
I mean, I'm not against used games. I've bought them before, but when there's a game that deserves the support, definitely always buy it new, and that is a game that deserves a brand new purchase. For only $20, I mean, it's a good investment, and chances are you will be Enchanted.
Oh, no, if nothing else, you can spend your whole time on the dock fishing. That was the other one that blew me away. What the fucking... What? I'm fishing in a horror... In a supposedly horror genre game. This is fucking awesome. Look, I caught a bass. Oh, wait, and I can eat the thing? Oh, this is freaking brilliant. I'm sold. This is the best $20 I've ever spent. You know, I mean, so. Well, all right, Jim, we appreciate you coming on. Glad and happy to see all your success.
Yep. Thank you.
Wish you very much more. Gunsage, anything to say before we let Jim go?
Nope, just glad to have you on.
Yep, thanks, Jim. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Go eat so you don't starve.
Yeah, okay, I'm off.
All right, see ya.
Okay, guys.
That was, once again, our interview with Destructoid.com's Jim Sterling. I really enjoyed doing that segment. Got to ask him a lot of questions about things I've been curious about, things Gunsage have been curious about. It was a nice change of pace on that particular show. The next thing I want to do in this Best Of show is talk to you about the music. And when I say music, I mean the intro and exit music. Believe it or not, a couple people have asked about that. Both those pieces are stuff I arranged using loops and other things. No, I'm not a musician. No, I'm not that musically gifted. But just because I wanted something that was distinctly our own and not something we'd begged, stealed, or borrowed, I decided to come up with our own little intro song. A couple people have asked if it was longer or what it sounds like in its entirety. You only get about 30 seconds of the show, or of the song, excuse me. So now, for those handful of people that have asked, I'm going to give you the entire song. If you do not enjoy it or do not want to listen to it, then fast forward about a minute or so. Enjoy. Musical genius is now secured. Right, as I told you, I'm not a musician. Hopefully at least one person enjoyed that. If you fast-forwarded through it, I hate you. It took me a better part of, an hour to put that together with loops. The next thing is going to be what I used to call a bonus rant, but it's not so much a bonus rant as it is more of clearing something up. I've heard from a couple people, including one super secret ninja listener that I have planted to tell me and the guys when we're screwing up or not. He kind of made mention of the fact that, man, you really, really hate Sony, don't you? And, you know, it's come up before, and we do bash on Sony a lot. But again, I do not hate Sony. I don't think anybody on the show hates Sony. You have to be able to separate the product from the marketing, or the product from the people, I suppose you would say. Sony products are wonderful. I have a PlayStation 2 sitting here immediately to my left. Had Sony TVs over the years. I have no issue with it. I'm pretty sure eventually I'll get a PS3 because there are quite a few games I want to play on it. My problem with Sony specifically is just their kind of bluster and arrogance that they portray in their marketing. And yet, for all of that, how often it bites them in the ass. I mean, the launch of the PlayStation 3 was kind of a disaster. It's looking more and more like maybe this 3D TV with the glasses may turn out to be the same way. The PSP, I mean, the DS has been kicking its ass for the last couple of years. What is their response to the 3DS announcement? A loudmouth kid who I'd like to smack in the face. I mean, it just, there's so many things on the marketing side and the image side that Sony does that I just, it's hard to pass it up. We talk about video games and gaming on this podcast. You know, does that mean I think Microsoft's so that much better a company and I'm Xbox 360 for life? No. When we started this show, it was my intention to pick on the stupid things. Whether that's from the publishers, whether that's from the console makers, or whether that's from gamers themselves, nothing was going to be sacred. There was going to be no sacred cows. It just so happens that Sony catches more shit from us than most due to the way they've decided to market themselves, due to the way they've decided to portray their image. I'll give you a classic example. At E3, when they announced Move, they made sure that you understood that the Move wand was going to be X price, which was quite a bit lower, no, significantly lower, than the Kinect peripheral. Very smart and very slick marketing. But at the same time, it's a little dirty, because by the time you figure out everything you need to use Move, if all you have is a PlayStation 3, the price gets quite a bit closer to the initial price of Kinect. And that's only for one person to use it. If you want the up to four people that can use Move, you have to spend significantly more. Now, I'm not saying Move's a bad piece of equipment. I'm just using this as an example to show you what kind of annoys me about Sony. Microsoft does it to a lesser extent. Activision does it. EA does it. But Sony, that seems to be their mantra and what they want to do, at least in the PlayStation division. And it hasn't done them any good. I mean, yeah, it just doesn't. And it perpetuates the stupid console war attitude with some people, which I understand you're never going to get rid of entirely. But at the same time, too, it doesn't mean just because I bash on their marketing and I bash on some of the stupid things they say and do, it doesn't mean I have anything against them or I won't use their products. Please don't put us in that fanboy category of, oh, we're all Xbox only. I'm kind of hoping that right after Christmas time, I have the cash available to get a PlayStation 3. Because then we can cover PlayStation 3 games on the podcast. And I don't have to talk about just their stupid marketing and the things they do that annoy me. Because there is a lot of good games for the PlayStation 3. And there's a lot of benefit to the PlayStation 3. It's just Sony needs to capitalize on that and leave behind Marcus and leave behind that other idiot who's named Kevin Butler. I mean, it just, it grates on me. And so I'm going to point it out. Like I would when gamers are doing stupid stuff, like boycott and this and that. So for those of you that think I hate Sony and that I'd never allow a PlayStation 3 in my house or anything like that, I don't, and we don't, and just wanted to take this time during the Best Of Show to clear it up. And there you go, that's the bonus rant. And moving on to our last segment in this Best Of Show, it's a discussion topic that comes from episode 37. It's one where we discussed whether or not we like realistic guns in games, meaning realistic characteristics in video game guns. Have a listen.
Now, our discussion topic. This discussion topic's actually been floating around with me for a couple weeks because several weeks back, Kotaku did a series, or a piece of a series, that I actually found really, really interesting. What they did was they went and asked game devs, longtime game devs, if they had ever worked with real guns while developing first-person shooters, which was something I found interesting because a lot of times I don't think the gaming industry has a bloody clue how a real gun works. So some of their answers surprised me, and if you go dig around on Kotaku, I'm sure under their features you could find this article. But it leads me to ask you gentlemen this question, and Patrick will go with you first. There's always bitching and crying and moaning in realistic shooters, you know, not Halo per se, about overpowered guns, about this, about that. If the devs are putting in the time to find out what these guns actually do, Do you have a problem with them being more realistic and the consequences, both good and bad, that come with that?
Not really. I mean, let's take probably the best example from what I've seen from developer videos and blogs and stuff like that would be DICE. They do an amazing job both in the sound department and with testing real weapons and real training facilities for weapons. So they're about as realistic, I think, as you can get with their physics and all of that stuff. And I think that that's helpful for the game. I think that if there is an overpowered weapon in some of the Battlefield games, that's the way the weapon really is. So I don't think it's bad for better or for worse. Maybe they, for the sake of gameplay balance, to make it less realistic, don't have the weapon available as often or have less ammunition or have some way of countering that. You know, if it's a realistic game, they should have the weapons as realistic as possible. And I, you know, I'm very impressed with what DICE has done and what they're doing. I saw the Medal of Honor series, they're doing the same thing. They were on some sort of training field in, for the U.S. Army, and they were, it was very realistic. So to answer your question, if that's what it's like in reality and they're trying to make a realistic game, then, you know, there's not much we can do about it except for duck.
Gunsage just brought up a good point, and I actually have a second part of that question, Patrick, that you kind of touched on it, but I'm not talking about realism as far as the violence goes, people. I don't want to get into that. I don't think it's, I don't think it's necessary or the general gaming public is ready for real human violence. No, and it's just not something worth discussing. You all think, there's a lot of people that think, oh, that's what I want, that's what I want. No, you don't. No, you don't. I have never seen human-on-human gun violence, but I've seen enough human violence, and it's by no means a lot, to tell you, no, you don't. And if you do, go look up that Bud Dwyer video that Jim used in his Jimquisition. Trust me, you do not want to see these games get more realistic as far as the humans go. I don't care how insane you think you are. It just tells me that you probably haven't ever seen it in reality or haven't seen it very much. So no, we're not discussing the whole violence realism thing. So now back to the topic at hand. Gunsage, are you okay with these guns, some guns being more powerful, the guns being more realistic, and the developers taking the time to work with these weapons?
Well, if they want to go for accuracy, then I look at it more like a role-playing game, even if it's not a role-playing game. You got a lot of stats. You got to go ahead and figure out all the different calculations and behind the scenes shit. And in that respect, you get more of an accuracy perspective. I like it because honestly, I look at it and I go, they took the time to sit down and say, this is how it works. This is the actual realistic stopping power. This is what it will do whenever it hits a person. Well, they probably simulated with like pig corpses or some shit, if they did anything like that at all. This is what they sound like from a distance, the reverb, you know, whether it deafens you right immediately or what have you. I like it. I do like that. I do like it when they take the time to do that. It does, it shouldn't matter to me because I'm still looking at it like, well, right, but it's just a game. But when I look at something like, say, Modern Warfare, or Modern Warfare 2, what have you, I like it when they really take the time to sit down and analyze all the information, get actual military information, facts, what have you, advisors, consultants, what have you, because it develops a more enriching experience for what they're trying to go for. Even though as gamers, there's a good chance that even if they bullshitted a bunch of material, we probably wouldn't pick up on it. There's some stuff that we'd be like, that's totally fucking fake, you know? So I look at it and I go, it's nice. It is. I appreciate the fact that they're doing it for certain games. It doesn't need to happen with all games, but it's still very nice.
Okay, so this leads me to the other side of the coin for you, Patrick. If you approve of more realistic guns in most shooter types, now we're not talking Halo or something like that, and I'm not bashing on the Halo franchise, but it is not based somewhat in reality. Do you think that as gamers, we should just learn to live with these guns as they are, or do you support the nerf campaigns that seem to come up with every one of these games, even though they don't seem to work, if Battlefield Bad Company 2 is any indication.
Well, in a game like, say, I'd find the Battlefield series to be much more realistic. In a game like that, no, I don't want any nerfing. Like I said, you could take the guns out or have less ammo or have some way of dealing with it. But in a game like Call of Duty, then, you know, it's a lot more arcade-like, a lot more, less realistic, quote-unquote. I think nerfing a gun that's ruining the fun is perfectly fine, and it might be needed to do. But in a game like Battlefield, it's, you know, some people may have never played the two games and don't know the difference. There is a difference between the two games. I think we should just learn to live with it. Or, if anything, the developers don't nerf it because some 12-year-old is crying about it, but they limit it. Less weapons or less ammo or something like that, but the same effect. I don't think they should change the physics of a realistic gun in a realistic, quote-unquote, realistic shooter just because some 12-year-old's crying about it. In a less realistic shooter like Call of Duty, on the other hand, if it's hampering our gameplay and our fun, maybe they should.
Well, and I'll get a little more into this in my turn, but the ones in COD were unrealistic for realistic guns. You know, the shotguns do not shoot like that in real life with sawed-off barrels. I'm sorry. It just, and I know because I've shot sawed-off shotguns. It just doesn't happen. So with that, I'm with you on the nerfing, you know, but arcade shooters, yeah, maybe, but the COD example kind of got out of hand because it was unrealistic for video games, some of that shit. Gunsage, are you for the nerfing crowd or do you say just learn to strategize better?
Well, this is the way I look at it. If you really want everything to be balanced out so there's no tiers of weapons or whatever, the first thing you need to do is say, okay, how can we present positive strengths and weaknesses for each and every weapon? And then go, this is the tiers of weapons as they are presented. In other words, things like, is an AK-47 better than an M4 carbine? Things of that nature. Does it have more, you know, expansion capabilities as far as different upgrades and supports and what have you? Because if it does, that has to be taken consideration too. Now, the reason why I say that is because then you can say, okay, so at level 1, you have this default set. You can go ahead and have different classes that are of this default set. One isn't inherently better than another, but still serve differing purposes. They're not unbalanced as a result. If you went ahead and did something along those lines, then it would work. You wouldn't have to nerf the weapons at that point. The only time you should ever really have to, quote-unquote, nerf the weapons is if you, as a developer, did not catch a glitch, like the Javelin glitch with Modern Warfare 2. Beyond that, you shouldn't be fucking with things. I don't believe that knifing someone should be an instant death thing in Modern Warfare, but I also look at it and I go, okay, except you have to get close and you have to melee. So that's kind of a, you know, risk-reward system there. It's unfortunate and annoying that you can exploit it to a degree, but I wouldn't want it nerfed either because that's still a tactic. That's the whole point.
I love this topic. I wasn't really sure how either Patrick or Gunsage would respond to it. And here's why I love this topic. I was born and raised around guns. Now, I wasn't shooting them from the time I was 2. Obviously, my parents have more sense than that. But from the time of, say, 7 or 8, I had a BB gun. I moved up to a .22 caliber rifle, moved on from there to various and sundry guns, and so on and so forth. Doesn't mean I've got them poking out of windows here at the house in case the UPS man's going to try and start some shit. No, I was raised around them correctly and taught to treat them as a very deadly device. But at the same time, what it has done, it is made me the most uber critic, and I will accept that sometimes it's a little bit annoying or over the top, about guns and games. And it also really annoys the shit out of me when they get nerfed. And that too has to do with the fact that my mentality when playing a first-person shooter is there's no such thing as cheap. Now, I got made fun of by Patrick and G the other night for saying that I have more of a reality, or I forget how I said it. I said it incorrectly. When I play a first-person shooter game, my mentality is You die, I live, I don't care how I do it. There's no such thing as cheap. There's no such thing as a dirty kill. There's no such thing as a dirty weapon. Ask Patrick, I killed more idlers last night in Halo while other people were like passing them by. Fuck that, it's a kill. You're stupid, standing there not paying attention, I'm gonna kill you. That is my mentality. Because in reality, if you were ever put in a situation where you have a gun and somebody else has a gun and they're firing at you, that is what is going to happen. You kill them or they're going to kill you. So as far as I'm concerned, I am all for guns that are more powerful, less powerful, have different characteristics, and give the players a chance to decide on their style of play and their style of weaponry. I'll give you a classic example of when it doesn't work, and that's the Halo franchise. I'm sorry, and this is where I do tend to get a little too picky, but I'm sorry, Bungie. Two shots in the center mass, and for those of you that don't know what a center mass is, that's anything above your belt buckle and just below your throat. Two shots in the center mass, I don't care if you're wearing 7 tons of armor, you're dead. You're dead. Yet, I can put two shots through a scope, visually see it, center mass, and some jackass in SWAT where you have no shields, and I still get headshotted. Yeah, well, on one hand, too realistic might be a little bit of a problem. That's ridiculous. And by this point, we should be able to put together a shooting model or a hit model that doesn't allow that to happen. I have no issue with being shot in the head by somebody who's faster than me at SWAT. Let's just get that out of the way for anybody that's played SWAT with me and listened to me, bitch. That's not my problem. My problem is when I get two in your center mass and you still can shoot me in the head, that's annoying. You know, nerf the guns in reverse. As to the nerfing factor, I know it's never going to happen. It inherently, gamers are lazy and whiny, unfortunately. I bitch and complain. Patrick says the word fucking cunt occasionally when something annoys him. Gunsage claims that he's put a whole clip and threw a tank at a guy and he didn't die. I mean, we all complain. We all know how the game works. I'm not cutting on any one of us. We all know how the game works. So we're right there in the same boat. But the problem is that these developers should not kowtow to these whiny bastards. Learn how to use the weapons put in the game. I am all for DICE and for Respawn Entertainment and for Treyarch to make these games as guns as realistic as possible and force gamers to learn how to use them. Because no two guns behave the same. You know, Patrick's a great case study because he doesn't like a gun with a lot of kickback. I have seen him kill people in mass in a game with a gun that's less powerful, but is comfortable for him. I wish more gamers were like him rather than running to the nearest forum board to whine that you got killed by the same gun 47 times because you're a moron. And you want to run and gun rather than attempt to be a little bit smart about it, especially in a series like Battlefield. God help us all if EA and DICE ever change the Battlefield series to be more like Halo or COD. It's the one more breath of fresh air in there. But I know it'll never happen. I know it'll never happen. Sorry, I got distracted by somebody who's trying to rush me along. Apparently I'm taking too long for their liking. I know it's never going to happen. Because gamers don't want that. They want to be satisfied. You know, they want things their way. But I was curious to see what these gentlemen thought of realistic guns versus just nerfed video game guns a la Quake and games we played in the old days. And that has been our discussion topic. Apparently I have an executive producer now, and I was not aware of that.
There you have it, our discussion topic from episode 37. And for those of you who have ever wondered if there's any tension or occasional arguments with the WonderPod crew, a couple of my comments toward the end of that segment should give you some kind of hint. This has been the best of WonderPod, the second best of WonderPod we've done. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. We will be back next week with our end of the year show, as we're gonna take some time off during Christmas and New Year's. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so at Facebook. That would be WonderPod Online, or you can reach us via email at morphinenation23@gmail.com, morphinenation23@gmail.com. If our normal site that we host at, Project Wonder Boy, is not up at the airing of this show, you can pick it up at the WonderPod Online Facebook or iTunes or various other places. Until next time, I am Bruce McGee. Later.